first seven verses here. And so let me just go ahead and just read these verses. Chapter 4 is really a chapter about the various ways that God provides. And this is an example of one of those unusual situations that involves Elisha the prophet. Verse 1, now a certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets cried out to Elisha, "Your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that your servant feared the Lord, and the creditor has come to take my two children to be his slaves." Elisha said to her, "What shall I do for you? Tell me, what do you have in the house?" And she said, "Your maidservant has nothing in the house except a jar of oil." Then he said, "Go borrow vessels at large for yourself from all your neighbors, even empty vessels. Do not get a few. And you shall go in and shut the door behind you and your sons and pour out into all these vessels, and you shall set aside what is full." So she went from him and shut the door behind her and her sons. They were bringing the vessels to her, and she poured. When the vessels were full, she said to her son, "Bring me another vessel." And he said to her, "There is not one more vessel." And the oil stopped. Then she came and told the man of God, and he said, "Go, sell the oil and pay your debt, and you and your sons can live on the rest." So here you have probably what I would say is a typical situation that would have taken place in that particular period in time. A man dies, leaves his wife, and in this case, two sons, penniless, and he also left a debt that had to be paid. She has virtually no food, no income, no government program to apply to, no prospect for improvement, no way to pay back the loan that her husband had, whatever that debt was. All she had was these two sons and a creditor who was about to come and take them away to be slaves, to pay off that debt, which was legal in that time. If a person couldn't pay back their debt, that person would become the slave of that individual, or he could take their family members to become slaves, and they'd work off the debt. And depending on how long that would last, when the year of Jubilee came, all the servants and slaves were set free. But that was every 50 years, so this was not a good situation. Her only resource that she had, of course, was this partial bottle of oil, not 10W-40 or anything like that. Oil is precious, we know that. But this was probably olive oil or nard, a type of oil that really in that day was like money because it was substance that was a commodity, it was marketable. If you had oil, you could sell it in the marketplace and make an income with that. She had just a little bit for whatever use she had for it, whether cooking or whatever else. But that was it. And not at all enough to pay back the debt, not even put a dent in whatever that debt was, obviously. So we could say that this woman comes to Elisha, the prophet, in a condition of emptiness or nothingness. But she learned what God can do with empty vessels. Empty, I think, would be the key word here. Empty, emptiness. And Elisha didn't tell her to go out and try to borrow food or to borrow some more money from neighbors. That would just create another debt she couldn't repay. But he said to go gather up as many jars or vessels that she could borrow from her neighbors. It was like Elisha was saying to her, "Lady, you've got a lot of emptiness in your life right now, but you don't have enough emptiness. Go out and get some more empty jars," which seems kind of a strange thing to do. "Bring them back to your house and see what God is going to do." So she did. She set out, and her and the two boys gathered all those empty jars and brought them back to the house, and she began to pour. And as she's pouring, it fills up the one vessel, and they grab another one, and it keeps pouring, and it keeps filling that one up, and that one vessel just keeps flowing with oil until all of those jars that they had were completely full, and she's still pouring oil and says to the boy, "Give me another jar," and he says, "There aren't any left." In other words, no more emptiness. So what happened then in verse 6, as soon as the jars were full, the oil stopped flowing. That's not a bad thing. It actually is an indication of a good thing. The oil stopped flowing because the Lord had provided beyond what was necessary. He went way beyond the basic need. As I thought of that, it reminded me of what Paul wrote in Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20. "Now to him who is able to do far more abundantly beyond all that we ask or think, according to the power that works within us, to him be the glory in the church and in Christ Jesus to all generations forever and ever." To him who is able to provide it far abundantly beyond what we can imagine. He can do that if he wants to. And that's what he did in this woman's case. Way more oil than she ever needed. But yet she was able to take that oil to the marketplace and sell it, pay off the debt, and still had plenty for her and the two boys to live on. The Lord provides. So that's the primary interpretation of the text, how the Lord provides. Never once has he failed in any of his promises. He would be a liar if he did. But as we bring this into kind of a spiritual application, let's, for the sake of application, think of this in terms of being filled with the fullness of Christ. Now, how that plays itself out in our lives may vary. But certainly, being filled with the fullness of Christ would be something that gives us a sense of peace, satisfaction, fulfillment, things we don't find in what the world offers, even though, you know, there are things that we find satisfying, things that we enjoy in life. Being filled with the fullness of Christ, we're not just thinking here in terms of material things, but spiritual blessing and being fully satisfied in him. I think most Christians would admit that we get into times when we feel empty. And if we were all kind of forced to be honest, you know, and make confession, we probably would have to admit that we do have those times. When we don't experience the fullness of Christ in our lives, we're running on empty. Maybe you're running on empty tonight. I don't know. But we serve a Lord who specializes in filling emptiness. He's the Creator who created this world out of nothing, created the expanse, which is all of outer space, and he filled it from nothing, just spoke it and filled it with all the planets and the stars and the galaxies and all of that. And then he singled out this tiny little speck of a planet with all that vast expanse, this planet called Earth. And he chose to fill it with people, mankind, to replenish it, and to focus his attention on that little tiny speck of a planet that we live on. So is your tank running on empty tonight? Your spiritual tank, that is. Well, what I want to just give you quickly here, and then I want to show a 10-minute video of this story, which comes from the God Provides series that we've been borrowing from a few times over the last several months. I'll get those back to you, Carol, someday. But sometimes the reason we feel the emptiness when it comes to being filled with Christ is that we're filled with other things. There are other things in our lives that are taking its place. For example, if we're going to be filled with the fullness of Christ, we need to be emptied of sin. Now, I take what Isaiah the prophet said in Isaiah 59, verses 1 and 2. He said, "Behold, the Lord's hand is not so short that it cannot save, nor is his ear dull so that he cannot hear, but your iniquities have made a separation between you and God, and your sins have hidden his face from you so that he does not hear." So we know that it's our own sins that we might harbor in our lives, the things that we're not willing to deal with, that stop the flow of the oil of the fullness of Christ. So what's required of us is a recognition of those things and confession of those sins and forsaking them. And in the verse we considered this morning, Psalm 66:18, "If I regard iniquity or wickedness in my heart, the Lord will not hear." To regard means to cherish or to tolerate or to foster. If I keep those things, then it's interfering. And we're not talking about sinless perfection, of course. We know that. We're talking about clearing out those ongoing sins or sin that we simply learn to tolerate. Or we just refuse to abandon because we either feel we can't overcome them or we enjoy them too much. So we'll find a way to justify them. That's going to interfere with the flow of the oil of the fullness of Christ. Secondly, we need to be emptied of self. See, we can be so full of ourselves that how in the world could Christ fill us? There's no room for him. Most of you recognize the name George Mueller, a man who many, many years ago exemplified a life of emptiness to self. His reputation was his faith, his prayer life. He was often asked about his life of faith, and this is one of the answers he gave. He said, "There was a day when I died. I died to George Mueller. His opinions, his preferences, his tastes, his will. I died to the world and its approval. I died to the approval of my friends. And since then, I have studied only to be approved unto God." That makes a difference. And William Booth, the founder of Salvation Army, was asked the secret of his success. And very emotionally, his answer was, "God has had all there was of me to have. There have been men with greater opportunities, but I made up my mind that God was going to have all there is of William Booth. If there is truly any power in the Salvation Army today, it's because God has had all the adoration of my heart, all the power of my will, and all the influence of my life." So really, the truth is we'll never be filled with the fullness of Christ until we stop bowing down to the shrine of self. We have to get rid of this "it's all about me" idol. Because nothing blinds our spiritual vision like self-will and self-centeredness, and nothing clears up that vision like total surrender. And then finally, we need to be emptied of substitutes. Emptied of sin, emptied of self, emptied of substitutes. Now, what do I mean by substitutes? Well, maybe all too often we are guilty of substituting service for surrender. As important as service to the Lord is, it's no substitute for, first of all, surrender to the Lord. Sometimes we substitute work for worship. We look at all the things we do for God, but we really haven't gotten a hold of worshiping Him. We become busy, but not blessed. And as a result, that's when we run on empty. Because we're so occupied and pouring ourselves into the service and into the work and into the busyness, as noble and as God-honoring as it might be, that we begin to run out of fuel. But we keep going. We keep pressing on because evidently we're not empty enough. We've got just enough substitute to keep us driving, whether it's moving ahead because we're motivated by guilt, or because we're pressed into doing this, or we're motivated by fear, whatever it might be. If I don't serve the Lord, He's going to get after me. That's the wrong motivation. That's a substitute. We need work, but we need worship. Or someone said, all work and no worship makes Jack a grumpy, disgruntled, oversensitive, burned-out Christian. I don't know about you, but I don't want to be that, but I got to admit I'm pretty close to it. I get pretty close to that. Grumpy, disgruntled, oversensitive, burned out. And I know the reason why. Because so focused on the service and on the work and on the busyness that I forget about the surrender and the worship. And I lose the blessing. That's running on empty. When we really need the fullness of Christ in us. And the only way is to empty ourselves of the sin, the self, and the substitutes. And ask God to fill us and use us. And then see how He will provide for our needs, as well as the peace in our own Christian lives. Well, that's the exposition of that text. Let's just sit back and enjoy a little dramatic video of that story, and then we're going to sing a couple more songs and have our baptism.